with Sophie Black.
Hello and welcome back. My guest this week is Catherine Parkinson, comedy actress extraordinaire who's been in gazillions of things, including The IT Crowd, Humans, and more recently, Home I'm Darling, the now Olivier Award-winning play by Laura Wade. I'm going to tell you a bit about it in case you haven't seen it as we talk about it in the podcast. It centres around a couple who love everything 1950s. They love the clothes, the music, the cars, and most importantly, the sort of domestic dynamic. Catherine's character, Judy, gives up a successful career to devote her time to cleaning and cooking and being the sort of perfect 50s housewife. And the play is all about the couple's response to that and their sort of changing needs and expectations and stuff. Anyway, that may be useful later on when we discuss it later on. I don't actually know Catherine personally. She's the first person I've had on the podcast who I didn't know beforehand. She's a friend of a very good friend of mine, Ingrid Oliver, who you can hear us slagging off throughout the interview. I could have edited that out, but I chose not to. Anyway, when she came to see me, I asked her when it was that she first decided she wanted to have children.
I'm a deeply conventional person in many respects, and I'm somebody that always expected to have them and hoped to have them. So from that point of view, that was easy. It was always going to be part of my narrative, hopefully, you know. Mm. And I met my husband ridiculously early. We were children. And
were you actually children?
No. That's
always a bit weird.
I wouldn't admit it if we were. We were like early 20s or maybe 25. Maybe I'm a bit older than him. Anyway, we just sort of, for years, just drank kava and watched The X Factor and just didn't even talk about it. It just didn't occur to us. I don't know, for 10 years. But anyway, when...
But that's what's quite nice. I think a lot of people I know now who are sort of, you know, maybe in their late 30s and meeting someone, kids are always a huge part of that conversation. And actually, that's what's so lovely about getting together with someone younger is you can just drink kava and play video games, and it doesn't even cross your mind.
I'm pleased that suddenly at 34, I just felt incredibly broody, having not felt it at all. It was overnight for me, and I just suddenly wanted to do it, and then did. But to answer your question, I remember years ago an actress saying to me, you know, an actress in her 60s that I was working with said, you know, this acting really works well with children, and although it had no kind of relevance to my life at the time, it sort of lodged in my head. And I think it's true. I think it really does work well with children. And what a relief that I accidentally wanted to be something that works really well with the other thing I wanted to be.
Why do you think it works particularly?
Because even though I would say I probably work quite a lot, I'm still probably at home... I mean, at the school gate, I'm in the stay-at-home mum buddy group sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm also able, to an extent, to, you know, if I get sent a job that's filming in South Africa for 4 months, I don't go in for it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of a privilege, isn't it? And I've lots of women at the school gate do jobs that take them abroad, or even the ones that don't, you know, they're doing long hours and... they have a sort of 6 month maternity leave and then they're back in the game and missing school drop and pick up.
Yeah.
And I think that's just kind of almost non-negotiable in some of the stuff they do because of the way it is. But our work is project based basically, isn't it? And you know, and I think it's changing even within our business because my last job, a lovely friend and director, Tamara Harvey, just shortened the working days because she's got young children and it didn't make any difference to anything other than everyone was a bit happier and less stressed.
I think that's the thing. It's sort of more pronounced in sort of office jobs, which obviously most jobs are office jobs. You know, most things are largely focused around a kind of computer.
What is office?
What is office? So, and that, I've worked in radio for a long time, and so much has changed in the last 20 years, which means that, you know, it's not great that you are contactable all the time, but you can actually edit from home, and you can actually, you know, deal with that when it needs to be dealt with at 7 a.m. in the morning at home. You don't have to be in the office. So it's amazing. I find it astonishing that because it is more understandable that actually acting would work well with kids, but I find it astonishing that actually more office jobs can't be more creative about how they...
I'm sure they will become more. So, I mean, my mum was, you know, there was no plan with her work. She was stayed at home until we all went to school, and then she became a teacher, which, of course, accidentally and brilliantly worked very well with, you know, the school holidays were the same. I think it's such a privilege to fall upon a job that works well with children. And that's been one of the best discoveries, actually, is that, you know, I'm self-employed. And although that comes with a lot of fear and stress and uncertainty, basically that works really well with parenthood, motherhood.
So you are now Olivier nominated for your role in Home, I'm Darling. Is that... is theatre a sort of... How does theatre work in that context? Because obviously presumably you're around during the day, and then you have to come in.
Well, I'll give you... I like to talk about the boring logistics of things because I've read interviews with various film stars that talk about not wanting to do theatre because they want to be at home for bedtime, and I always think, but I'm much more around when I do theatre. It's one of, the alluring things about it for me. And maybe it's because the last play I did, Dead Funny in the West End, my youngest was still having a nap in the afternoon, so that was sort of perfect. But this time round, they're both at school, but I get up I get them ready for school. My husband lets me off the school run because I look so horrific. And he thinks it's going to compromise our...
their standing in the community.
Yeah. So I get them ready for school, have a good chat with them, pass out again in bed, and then I pick them up at 3. And, you know, I do have to be in a bit earlier for Home, I'm Darling, because I have a set, you know, of rollers in my hair and quite a big makeup job. Yeah. But normally I'd cut it very fine. barely there for the half, normally. But
you don't have any fight scenes to practice.
I'm not somebody who does an extended warm-up. Let's put it like that. This is my vocal warm-up. Yeah. I June Watson, a great older actress, taught me just to go hip flask, and that way you cover the range of your voice. So I say hip flask a few times, but you know, I get in a bit. I have to leave just at 5.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not loads of time.
No.
But then they've had holidays around the job. You know, I'm taking it to Bath, and they're on the Easter holidays, so they're with me, and it's obviously short term, but I like being there at the beginning and the end of their day, and I feel like I'm just sort of missing bath time and stuff.
My kids are too young for this at the moment, but someone said to me recently that actually that's the point that's the key time with your kids, because actually as they're leaving school and that thing is in their head that they're worried, you know, as they get older, that's the time that's actually really key. So when they come out and they go, oh, my friend said this to me, or the teacher said this, or whatever, you're there to soak that up.
Absolutely, because my eldest particularly wants to do a stream of consciousness, as I remember. I was like that with my mum, still am, my poor mum. And she wants to give me all the information, and I feel like I've got it then. When you're filming, it's, you know, for me, it's up at 4:30, and because I'm a bit out of, you know, I'm usually the first pickup on the call sheet because where we live. But and then back, you know, at 9 and or 8. But you miss both ends of the day.
Yeah.
And although I haven't done many filming jobs where I'm in every day, that's the advantage of that.
It's
quite part time.
Yeah.
You do just kind of miss a day's information.
And it's not something that you know, adults tend to kind of store that up and go, oh, I'm going to say that the next, you know, it kind of goes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Hello? Is it a microphone?
In terms of the play you're in at the moment, home, I'm darling. I just, it really reminded me that, so this, the whole reason this podcast is called Trapdoor is because when I had kids, I felt like I'd sort of fallen through a trapdoor into a sort of 1950s housewife kind of world that I never ever thought I'd end up in. You know, suddenly I was loading washing and emptying washing and taking the bins out and doing all of that, and that was kind of my existence, and nappies and everything. And you know, I don't quite know what my question is, but is that what drew you to the play? I mean, obviously the main difference with the play is that she doesn't have children, but
well, it's very interesting you say that, because somebody recently said to me that they had a friend in to see the show who said the 50s is a metaphor for having children. And I thought, oh gosh, that's interesting, because, you know, she talks, my character, about going back to work, but in a much less advanced role, yeah. You know, and she says, you know, I'm not looking for something at that level now. And when I say that line, sometimes there's a sort of audible intake from some of the women in the audience. And I mean, I think the play is such a robust and brilliant piece of writing by Laura Wade that lots of people can take from it what they want. But I think it can be read as more subversive and a bit more pointed than maybe some people think. It's a bit of froth about the 50s. But the thing with motherhood for me is that when I had my children, like a lot of women, I couldn't imagine ever leaving them. And that was that. I know not everybody has that. Some people are more practical, but I particularly with the breastfeeding thing, I was very sort of devoted breastfeeder, which surprised everyone, and wanted to do it exclusively, which meant my husband felt very like
left out.
His job was going to Sainsbury's and making me sandwiches, because there wasn't much else he could do. But but once we came through that, you know, what I have found, because my husband is also an actor, is that he has really stepped up, and that has allowed me to feel able to work and be very present at home.
Yeah.
So that's and I know that not everybody, you know, if you've got a husband who's working, you know, city hours or whatever, that isn't an option. That's kind of, you know, if you've got a partner who's running a building, you know, I sort of think it's more complicated.
Yes, and it's not about, you know, that's the thing. I think the situation I'm in, but my situation is that, my husband was already running a successful theatre, and he wasn't going to go, okay, let's do this 50-50, and then you can basically have the day to yourself and go off and do a voiceover while I, like, how does he, you know, he can't, that won't work. So the way we were set up meant that obviously I was going to spend more time at home. So going back to the play, then it could be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so cont. But I think the message I take from the play is that she's saying every relationship is different. Every relationship is. Have you seen the play, by the way?
Yes, I have. Yes,
it's a jive, and neither one should lead or both lead at different times.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's a constant communication, and it's what works for your couple.
Yeah.
And you know, I had periods when I was at home. You know, it's difficult as an actress, because you can't sort of pretend it's a choice.
No. Sort
of, but I will. Yeah. I chose to be at home.
Yeah.
through those years. But then there were other times when my youngest was born, I decided to get quite fat in pregnancy and enjoy myself, because I was looking forward to a long period off. And then this big sexy job came through, Humans, and I was like literally sort of, so you know, in a bowl of triple chocolate M&S cereal, breastfeeding her, thinking, oh my god, I've got to be on camera in a few minutes. And there was a huge sort of, I mean, first of all, I loved the scripts when they came through for that, and got excited from an artistic point of view. Second of all, I knew it would be financially a sensible thing to do.
Yeah,
not just financially, but also because a job like that is basically part-time,
and
multi-stranded, so I knew that in a way I was going to be buying my time at home if I did it for a long period of time.
But and that's just for people who don't do this kind of thing. That means that because there's so many different plots and characters that you're not going to be in every scene, therefore that will be spread across a
several weeks.
Yeah, you'd be filming sort of on average 2 days a week, ideally.
Yeah, which is, so you've basically got a neat little sort of part-time job.
Yes, yeah. And which has also meant that I decided if I did it, I would keep the breastfeeding going. I only mention it because I'm a very squeamish person, Ingrid will tell you. I'm basically Victorian.
Yeah.
And yet I had to get to grips with those awful machines, the express machines, on set, you know, in the makeup chair, alongside really attractive actors like Colin Morgan, who I didn't want him to hear my nipple
and it just goes,
oh my good Lord. I mean, apparently you can get silent ones now.
Really?
2 years too late for my purposes. But and I just, but I, you know, it's a compromise, isn't it? And you just sort of go, well, I'm going to feel less guilty about being away from her for a couple of days a week if I know I can do this. Be doing this, whatever, you know, that's how I felt. Because when I was with her, that's, I'm not very practical, and I found the breastfeeding much easier way to kind of.
Yeah, it's very convenient.
No sterilising of bottles and things. Oh, and God, anyway, so I just sort of went with it. And what the reason I mention it is because I was so impressed on that set and the set before it, Inside Number 9, that I did with my first one, with the firsts who were the guys running the floor who were men, as they often are at the moment, being just brilliant at letting me go off. I had a sort of code where I had to say whether according to how full and hot my bosoms were, I would say orange, amber or green.
That's funny. And
it's because they've all got partners who are doing it too. And who are also trying to kind of hang in there in the workplace a little bit so that it doesn't all go away when the children go back to school. Yeah. So I felt very
also I think for people like that, it's a really nice opportunity, especially if they've got partners who will have been having to navigate that in their own workplaces. It's a really nice opportunity for them to sort of go, oh, I know about this.
Yeah.
And I can actually make that easier for somebody because I know about it.
And like you say, with the office things, stuff can be done. You just have to sort of be part of that change.
Yes.
And it does get, you know, it wasn't that convenient that I left the floor for a bit, but I got quite quick at milking.
Fine,
and in the end, you know, Colin Morgan was doing it for me. He was milking my breasts. And
that's what you want. So did that mean you had to lose a lot of weight after your baby's born?
Well, I should have, but I didn't. It wasn't that quick a turnaround. And I was 3 weeks, she was 3 weeks old when I got the job. And I think I was on set a couple of weeks after that and sort of was always joking that I should have my placenta in my bag, you know. The reason, again, I mentioned it is that I can't watch some of that series because I don't look my best.
Right.
I think it's fair to say. I actually saw a producer the other day who said, yes, and you look much younger in real life. Just, why do people think that's a compliment? I'm both people.
Strange thing.
Yes, I'm both people. You're offending me either way.
Yes.
And he actually blew out his cheeks to demonstrate to me. This is a top producer.
Wow.
And I thought, oh God. And I felt really guilty. And then I defensively said, well, you know, I had a, my baby was, you know, 6 weeks old. I think I lied and said 3 weeks old when I was on filming. And,
oh my God,
but I don't think people hear that, particularly men. They 6 weeks is 6 months. It's like, if you actually think, you know, what was your partner like when your baby was that many, you know, and it's not like we have never had any kind of child care, Harry and I, because we made it work together and with my parents, who are brilliant, but they're based in Devon, so it's not...
Right, yeah.
And so I was up in the nights and I was very...
Yeah,
I was only happy to do that. I was only happy to do the job if I did that.
Yeah.
So I look absolutely fucking horrific in the first series of Humans. But...
I'm going to go
I did
look
it.
Now.
Go and look. Look at that. Oh, my God. And it's not because I had a wonderful makeup artist and everything. It's literally not polishing a turd.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that's... I suppose what I'm saying is you roll with the punches, you compromise. And, you know, if I'd sort of gone,
right, I've got a massive job and it's co-produced with American, you know, sexy Americans. Let's get a personal trainer in. Let's get a full-time nanny. I could have done it like that, maybe, but I didn't
want
to.
But you would have been compromising who you, how you wanted, what kind of mother you wanted to be, yeah, and how you,
I'm just pleased the way I did it, but I'm not, you know, it's not like we all came up smelling of roses.
Or looking like roses. I mean, I'm just kind of amazed that anyone would, like in this day and age, would still comment about how you looked, irrespective of kids. And the fact that you then feel that you have to sort of qualify it by saying,
I've had comments like that. You sort of think, first of all, you know, he was trying to frame it as a compliment, you know. But the trouble
you
is...
You don't look as shit as you did the last time I saw you.
Yeah. Oh, thanks so much. I don't know, I've had other people sort of sweetly say, oh, they really made you look different in that, didn't they? Or, I mean, not, you know, but I suppose I just, you know, there's no point pretending that what we do, that I suppose that nobody's going to forgive you for having doing a job with a very... That's only relevant to me at the end of the day, isn't it? And what I found interesting is, you know, I've had a few younger actress friends recently who've got pregnant and have said to me, you know, oh gosh, I'm hiding my pregnancy. I'm really worried. And I thought, how strange, because, I mean, I should say they're pretty hot stuff, the girl that's been in touch with me about it. And I think it's much more relevant. I don't think I'm an actress who's ever necessarily been cast purely on my sex appeal.
Right. I mean, it's pretty high up there, but yeah.
But she's, you know, a very beautiful girl as well as a great actress. And so she's sort of saying, oh, I've had to hide it. Because I suppose if your part is often kind of a romantic interest or whatever, that literally didn't occur to me, hiding my pregnancy. I was sort of mouthing off about it way too soon. And I actually didn't find them, you know, when I said I've got a brand new baby, nobody really, there was no sense that was going to...
Well, the roles were going to change suddenly. Because also your body shape does change. I mean, I imagine even if you pound personal trainers and all that kind of thing. I don't mean, you know what I mean?
I did that. I've always
done
that.
You know. Yeah. that your body's going to change and your...
Yeah, I mean, I look like an egg. I mean, I look like a sort of deflated egg for a while. That's normal, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, but yeah, no, I just, I didn't ever feel like I sort of think it's almost a feminist issue, actually, about those actresses feeling they've got to hide their pregnancy.
Yes, it
and I said to her, I think you should not hide your pregnancy. Yeah. I think you should absolutely own it. And
well, it's hiding your, for want of a better word, your womanhood. Is that the whole thing? I remember hearing something years ago, you know, one of those little facts that stay in your head. Well, someone said to me that, because I remember feeling quite grateful, I have quite small boobs, and I remember feeling quite grateful. No, I'm wearing like you would laugh if I took this bra off and showed you it would stand like it is a massive push. I have naturally very small boobs.
Well, they look fantastic.
Well, it's a great bra, let me tell you. Victoria's Secret. Which I bought with Ingrid, in fact. We went into the changing
She's
room and we bought matching bras.
She's a slut.
She is a slut, yes. I'm looking forward to her having children so that she can come on this.
And she's got them. She just keeps it quiet.
Yes, that's true. She just doesn't want to comply. Yeah, exactly. So I have quite small boobs. And I remember, sort of, you know, for ages, oh, it's so annoying. You know, I wish I had bigger boobs, blah, blah, blah. And then realising that actually for quite a few tops and clothes, it was actually much easier to not have big boobs, and that friends of mine who had big boobs couldn't really wear polo necks or kind of any even remotely lower neck top, whatever. Mm. And then someone made the comment to me that actually, oh, well, fashion is... I mean, this is... OK, it's a ridiculous comment coming up, but sort of largely male designers who are designing for a body, a sort of prepubescent body, and actually you're going to look best in clothes when you don't have the curves
that
ridiculous. Women
have. I think that's so true.
Yeah.
You know,
and so, but then that's the same again. You know, it's like if we're trying to crush down those things to kind of go, well, women, you know, let's design an evening gown that will suit a straight up and down stick thin body, and we're going to, and our, you know, because, you know, film and TV is such a, it plays such a large part in our kind of sort of consciousness in terms of what we think is beautiful and whatever. So if that's always going to be someone who doesn't have children and doesn't have a body that you know, then it's just really tragic. So as you say, we need to kind of...
It's not sort of moaning or being sort of suggesting that it's all kind of done in this knowing way. But there's a book out, I think, called I don't know what it's called actually. So there you are. Yeah. But it's about how every sort of all the data is based on men. So even like the symptoms of a heart attack are based on how a man experiences a heart attack. The sort of temperature of a room is all based on what suits a man, and so on. And it's just the amount of change that has to happen, but I think it will, you know, and I feel like change happens quicker than you expect because I have, you know, I feel like now it's very normal for actresses to kind of be there with a pump machine and it to be respected as a thing that's going to happen. I mean, I remember after my first, you know, when everyone descends on your house, even people you don't really know.
My sister's just had a baby, and she said almost categorically, the people you want to see are the people going, I'll give you some time, you know, da, da, da.
So
and yet the people you're not really that bothered about going, I'll be there on
when
Tuesday afternoon.
When you're having your blue time, when you're hormonal as anything, and all you want to do is be in the house with your husband and your baby. And it was very peculiar, and I'd never heard of this happening before. Anyway, so it's a quite sort of... Not even friends would come tell me they were coming round in the morning. And one of them, you know, as she held my days old baby, she said, so what have you been up to?
That's really good.
And I thought,
what did you say?
God, is it because I'm an actress you kind of don't think I actually gave birth to this baby? And so I found that actually the pregnancy thing was ignored almost too much.
Yes.
But it was just a sort of assumption that I wouldn't want to...
You wouldn't want to talk about it.
But, you know, or be at home, which I was, you know, with my first. I was sort of at home for the first 5 months, I think. I just did Inside Number 9 for a week, you know, which was a lovely thing to do to remind myself that I loved what I did as well. It was because it was at the time, I think, when the boys from the IT crowd were going pretty stellar, and her... You know, her kind of point was, you know, they're doing this. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And, you know, although they've both had kids, I don't think they gave birth to them.
I'll check.
I edit that out because I don't know that for a fact. I think Richard gave birth to one of his, but...
Well, but not both.
Yeah, not both.
The first one.
Not, yeah.
But it went really badly, so he decided not to the second time round.
They've used a surrogate since.
Yeah. How has having children affected the way you were parented and your relationship with your parents? Has it made you think, oh, actually, they're all right?
It really makes you do that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm amazed, actually, because my mum was quite young. She was 10 years younger than me when she did it.
Yeah.
And poorer.
Yeah.
And my dad's got many qualities, but
you know, different generation.
He hasn't changed a nappy, you know.
Same with my dad, absolutely.
Very hands-on with my kids, but I don't know why I just said kids. I never say kids. I hate that word.
Do you? Why do you hate the word
I don't
kids?
Know, it's American.
Yes, this is the Victorian side of you.
Yes, and it sounds a bit flip as well, my kids.
It's like I don't really care about them.
My kids.
Whereas my children, it's more serious, isn't it?
Yes, which I like to be.
I think you're right. I agree. Carry on. Although I do say kids all the time, but I won't say it again in your
please
presence.
Please don't. I mean, with the breastfeeding thing, I was such a kind of... I was so boringly into that. And my mum, you know, she breastfed us for sort of 2 minutes, and then because it was the 70s, you know, and it was the birth of formula and stuff. I don't know if it was the birth of it, but it was very pushed, I think.
It might have been the 60s, so it was still new, I think. Actually, I don't know. What do I know about when formula was invented?
That sounds right then. And she wanted us in our own, you know, out of her room, and I sort of co-slept and all the rest of it. But so we did things very differently, but the main thing, I've just gone, gosh, you know, what a good job
I mean, I do think you tend to mother the way the details might change. And they certainly have. But my mum's much more organised, and she's really into. I mean, I remember her polishing, and my earliest memory is just polish, you know, up my nostrils. She was always trying to stay in control, you know. Quite like in the play the tidiness and stuff. And of course I've gone the other way, and I'm completely chaotic that way, and it drives my husband Harry mad. But you know, I think you do tend to kind of react to, because I just
definitely,
I think she spent so much time cleaning and it used to, but I think I mother in a very similar way, in a sort of, you know, I just think I'm quite emotionally intense, I would say. But hopefully not to their detriment. And I just, you know, I love it.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think I'm the same. I was thinking that the other day, actually. Yeah, that maybe it's the what you give emotionally. And I don't mean in terms of love, but what you communicate emotionally and your honesty and your whatever is probably, you know, there are some people who are maybe... Keep
I think so, and it doesn't. Yeah. And that absolutely doesn't mean any.
No,
less,
no. And actually, they just have different. You know, they're probably, those kids are probably much more. My kids will go, "Oh my god, my Lego man's fallen on the floor."
I know, we're all so dramatic. You know, I'm sure it's sort of. But like, I think it's the same with some relationships aren't as high maintenance. Or I mean, I'm not. I wouldn't say we're high maintenance, but I certainly want to know exactly what's happened in his day, and he wants to know what's happened in mine. And you know, I think I've seen plenty of relationships that are much more kind of, and you know, work just as well. But I just think you tend to kind of course, you've learnt your parenting from your mum and and dad. But it's just something that I'm really enjoying it, basically. Yeah, and my mum's really enjoyed it. So,
and so she helps a bit with childcare.
Yeah, then my parents are my sort of lifeline. If me and Harry get something that's a clash, then they will come and just move in with us in our house that isn't really big enough for that. But actually, the first job we both did after my eldest was born was, we both did, you know, not very well paid theatre jobs, and that was really hard because, you know, we were there all day, but then we were both out in the evening, and my mum was away from her beloved garden and cat, and you know, it wasn't ideal. So we thought, right, we'll never do a theatre job at the same time again. We don't need to do that. But you know, to be honest, recently my husband's been doing an interesting example of how, you know, you make things work. You know, him and Dan Skinner have been doing a podcast, and they're both, you know, fathers who have actress wives, and they're both very much fathers who pull their weight and some.
Yeah.
And they've been doing, they started this podcast because they were leaving messages on each other's phones just to make each other
characters.
Laugh. Yeah, while they were with their children, their kids.
And Dan Skinner is the is Angelos. He does Angelos Epithemiou and lots of things. And was Mr. Kennedy in the Kennedys.
Yes.
Is your on-screen husband.
Yes, I think I'm sure Harry won't mind me saying I found him really attractive in that Aaron jumper. I love Aaron jumpers on men. Those, you know, 70s.
And also, Dan's beard, a beard in an Aaron jumper is quite probably,
I mean, I did say to him, you look like the Yorkshire Ripper, but in a nice way.
In a sexy way. And your husband, I'm now just working this out, wasn't he in Toast?
Yes.
He's like the funniest character by a million miles in Toast.
Oh, he is... an extremely funny man, and his Ray Purchase, he was in the Kennedys as the pervy neighbour.
Yes, of course.
So that was a childcare issue and a half, because that was my parents moving in with us. Yeah,
right. Yes.
Again, that was as much as we loved that. I thought, wow, that was hard, because I was still feeding Gwen through the night, and the levels of tiredness that you have sometimes. I mean, it was sort of like a joke how tired I was on that. I was
I mean, what I can't understand is how you learn lines. That's the thing. I for women who are breastfeeding in the night and waking up in the night and then filming, and you were the lead in that show, how you... I mean, I bow down. I just don't know how you...
I think you'd surprise yourself. I think it's one of those things that looks hard when you don't do it, and then actually you do it and you go, oh, that was...
You just get on it. Yeah. In a mindset.
The lines were not the...
Not the difficult
no,
thing.
No, to be honest, with filming, it's more just the length of the day.
Slog. Yeah,
and
the
sort of staying kind of conscious.
But, I mean, I remember the little bits that I've done. I might not be doing something for a couple of hours, and then someone comes and gets me, and I've sort of zoned out by that point. And that would have been on a very full night's sleep.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
I can't...
It's made everything easier since, because I did a filming job before Christmas, Defending the Guilty, with enough sleep. I think that was the first time I've done a job now, and six. And I was like, this is just... blissful.
If I can actually function.
Chatting to people not feeling like after lunch where you're lying there thinking, I don't think I can actually stand up and get to the makeup truck. again, that's why theatre has been, because I just feel like the hours, I love knowing they're asleep and going on stage, knowing that and Harry has done every bedtime, and he's much better at routine than me, and they have been down at the same time, happy, fed, and that's he's earned some serious brownie points.
I interrupted you when you were talking about Dan and Harry's podcast.
Yeah, well, I just think that's it's
I don't want any cross promotion on
the, it's a fictional, Brian and Roger is called, but it's been such a great example of them doing something creative and something so good and something so kind of creatively pure, because they just sort of do it in whilst also, I mean, our children are at school, and but I think Dan's is in nursery. They're not necessarily doing it with the children,
but I think his son is literally a couple of weeks older than my, because the reason I know this is because I was at a party with Ingrid Oliver, our good mutual friend, and we, that day, David and I had just found out that I was pregnant with my son. And so we arrive at the party, and we're like, we've got to keep this quiet. And also we hadn't seen each other all day. I'd done a test and then we hadn't seen it, so this was the first time we'd seen each other. So it was really bizarre and intense and wonderful. We saw Ingrid. I think we had dinner with Ingrid, and I kept it to myself. And then we went to the bar at the party, and she said, "What do you want?" And I said, "I think I might just have a tonic water." And she just turned around to me and said, "Are you pregnant?" And I went,
"Just a little bit. I might a little bit be."
I couldn't keep it, because it was like, obviously, I mean, I'm a heavy drinker. No, I'm not. Well, I am a bit.
Well, I didn't know I was pregnant, and had quite a few drinks with Ingrid.
Oh, did you? Yeah, bad influence. But at that same party, two other people accidentally told her that their partners were pregnant, and one of those was Dan Skinner. So Ingrid, in this bizarre party where she knows that three people who also know each other are all pregnant, and no one can tell her. So it was quite funny.
So how old are yours then?
So mine are 2 and 3.
And
so
they're boys?
No, there's a boy and a girl.
Ah.
Yeah.
And the girl is 2?
And the girl is 2. Yeah. The girl is too.
Oh, well, you're really in the thick of it.
Totally in the thick of it. Yeah. But actually, going back to...
It's amazing you're doing this podcast when they're that age.
But it's a really good, and in a similar way maybe to what Dan and Harry are doing, it's a thing that's coming. There's all this stuff in my head that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really positive thing to kind of be doing something that sort of,
It sort of feels like you're hanging in. Laura Way said to me, because we were sort of developing this play when ours were very little. She had the idea when I was pregnant with my first.
Right.
And then 6 children later, between me, Tamara and Laura, we're doing it.
Yeah.
And, we've had a lot of conversations about just, making it work. And sort of sometimes you sort of think it'd just be easier just not to do anything.
Yeah.
And although... I've always had a financial motivation, which is quite good, actually, because it means it's a no-brainer that you're going to work. But she said, it's just about hanging in there, isn't it, these years?
Yeah.
And I think that's true. And already I feel like things are so much easier when they're at school.
Yeah. But also I think it is about hanging in there. But I do, in my experience, And it sounds like in yours as well, like by your circumstances changing, i.e. you do want to be home at certain times, it sort of slightly changes the things that you do, and actually for good, you know. So actually you've probably always done theatre, but you know, you've realised that actually theatre suits your timetable more. And I've discovered that, you know, having worked for Radio 4 for a long time, actually making podcasts was a better, you know, it was actually, I could see my kids as well as, you know, and bring it home and edit, you know, and I didn't have to sit in the office like I would do at Radio 4, you know. And actually that's led to some changes, really positive changes for my career that happened to, like you say, you know, could be a happy accident, or it could just be that, you know, you've managed to, you know, tailor your life to your changing needs.
Yeah, and you know, with the theatre, I mean, the last show I did was 2 years ago. So for me, it's just that I'm pleased that I can get to do... So my hours, you know, I might not work for a few months after this, and then probably the next job I do might be a filming thing.
Yeah,
so it just...
Yeah.
It, as long as I keep changing the hours.
Yes,
and
yeah,
it means
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting, though, because, you know, when I... even though I now have children, I was sent a wonderful script not long ago, and I loved it. And I said, my brilliant agent said, oh, it's filming in South Africa for 4 months. And I said, well, presumably I wouldn't have to be there for 4 months. And they said, oh, yeah, you would be. And I said, well, do they know I'm a mother? I said, yeah. So you sort of think, what actress mother is going to go in for a job that, but presumably maybe, you know,
but also
maybe
I
if
guess,
you've got the structures in place and
but also you're at a level in your career where there's probably enough coming in that you can say, you know, I wonder if, I mean, I guess that role in itself is going to go to somebody who is also at that level, but I wonder if, you know, because there must be actors who feel like if they don't lose the weight as soon as they've had a baby, they can't risk not getting the... Do you know what I mean? Mm. They don't feel like they're at a point where... Which is why I always think it's better to have children slightly later, so that you have kind of, you know... You've got your foot in the, you know, your flagpole's in the ground. You know, you're established is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, I'm flippant about me and Harry, you know, drinking Carver and watching The X Factor for years. But the fact is that I think on some level I didn't dream of, you know, bringing babies into an environment where I needed to kind of be technically available for anything that kind of came along. And my body clock conveniently kicked in just when we were sort of, but I have to say, I mean, like any actor, we're quite in the moment and day to day, me and Harry, but you know, you're always worried that you're just never going to get any work. And I like to sort of, the good thing is that it's a no-brainer with doing a job that would take me away or mean I had to take them out of school and so on, so it's probably made me choosier in a way that's probably quite good. I'll only do a job if I really want
if
to do it.
Really, yeah.
But you know, I mean, to sort of suggest that I'd be lying if I suggested that I feel like I'm in a position where I can just sort of
certainly
financially.
Of course, yeah,
I
yeah,
spend
yeah, yeah.
all our money.
Yeah,
so.
So we need to find. I understand. I didn't mean that you.
But I agree. You've established. I definitely feel like I've done enough work to sort of go
to justify being able to say, because there's always that thing from the very little performing that I've done, where there's the fear of. I mean, and I think it's got to largely be bollocks, but it would sort of come from an agent, which is, well, you don't want to piss off that casting director, you know, you kind of, you want to stay in their good books, you want to, you know, which I remember very early on, which presumably you're not having to do anymore, you know, where you sort of want to show willing, you want to be available, you want to be, you know, all that kind of thing.
It's awful, that, isn't it?
It's like, pretty awful.
I never was never great at, I was always a bit willfully the other way, but yeah, that dance is sort of, once you get over 40, you don't want to be doing it, do you?
No.
Not that I'm over 40 yet.
I am very much safely.
Own my age. Yeah.
A question I ask everyone is, what's the worst bit of advice, or worst thing anyone ever said to you while you were pregnant, where you had babies, that you look back on and you think, what?
I can remember when I was pregnant, more than one person, and actually men, was sort of very, and a woman sort of very much like, oh, don't have a natural birth. Yeah. Which I thought was such a bizarre and sad thing to say. And since a young actress the other day said, oh my gosh, did you have natural births? As if that's a really strange thing.
Yeah.
And she said, but didn't it really hurt? I said, well, yeah, but it was the best thing I've ever done, giving birth to my children. I felt like a hero, you know.
Yeah.
And to sort of demonise something that we are kind of built for. I completely understand. God, if they'd said to me, you have to have a cesarean, it's breech, I'd have been delighted.
Yeah.
But I also, it was a brilliant experience. And I remember a guy saying, oh, no, and my partner, she had cesareans, just a nice elective cesarean, just a nice little neat little cut there, and just pull it out and you don't have to. And again, it felt like a bit of a feminist issue. It's like, oh, don't muck up everything down there, keep it all. And I thought, oh, God, let's not have become that society, for God's sake.
It's a really...
Cesarean's a medical necessity. It's not a preference.
Also, it's not the whole story. I think people just... I've definitely heard the argument that, women... if men had to give birth, none of them would be doing childbirth naturally. And it's just a way of saving money and getting women to do it that way, and all this kind of thing. And you're just like, actually it's, women's bodies get ruined and blah, blah, blah. Now, I'm not, there are people who have really horrendous birth experiences and, I'm not undermining that at all. But if it happens to go okay, then, after I gave birth to my daughter, I was making myself a cup of tea within about half an hour. And, and kind of... It can be like that. And, if you have a cesarean, you can have weeks of...
You can, I'm sure.
Wound and, infected and all that kind of thing. But it's not the whole story, and there's downsides to it all and upsides to it all.
I mean, if you're able to, and it's such a privilege, isn't it?
Oh, it's God, amazing. It's amazing.
I have my confidence, because I've never been somebody who's been great at owning my body or my... I was never quick off the mark with my... I don't even know what the word is. Sexuality, I suppose. I don't mean my orientation. I just mean my,
you're kind of like, coming of age, kind of like your puberty.
I was always sort of a bit kind of, squeamish about everything and, worried that everything about me wasn't normal or whatever. And then you give birth and you go, oh, wow, it all works. Yeah. And I have felt since much more in touch with my body and
like
sensual
an
and all
animal,
the rest of it.
Don't you? In a really good way, or just
you know
realize,
what to do.
Yes, weird,
in quite a
it?
Sort of primal way. And I feel slightly like, particularly in our business. I did some Radio 4 comedy not long after, and the producer was like, "You had natural births." That's quite an unusual thing for an actress to have. I know loads that have had natural birth, but I wonder if. Because I wasn't even, I was 34 and 36. It wasn't like a... But, I know an actress who was that age and she didn't even consider it. Her doctor, private doctor, said,
well,
you must have a cesarean. It's too risky. And I thought, oh, come on.
Yeah. It's
but I was at Lewisham on the NHS, so nobody made me feel like that at all.
But also I think that you and going back to very quickly what you were talking about in terms of breastfeeding, because I know that on this podcast we've talked a lot about, you don't have to breastfeed and blah blah blah. I was absolutely devastated that I couldn't breastfeed and tried and it wouldn't work for me. So as a result, I kind of accept that formula as a totally viable alternative.
But partly why I became so obsessed with it, I should clarify, because with my youngest, oldest, when I was at Lewisham, the birth was great, back-to-back labour with an agency midwife off the streets because it was so busy in the Olympics in Lewisham. My babies were quite petite and I've got quite big breasts and she just couldn't latch on properly. She got extremely jaundice and was on in NICU for a week, which was a awful
And it was because of that that I was so committed.
Yes, right.
You know, so it was driven by guilt, not by some kind of...
No, but I mean, that what I was going to compare it with is the fact that if you have had a natural childbirth and you breastfed, it's almost more difficult to say... It's almost... My experience now as a formula-feeding mother is that if I'd breastfed quite easily and naturally, it would almost be more difficult to say. It's almost gone the other way, in the sense that you sort of, if you've done things that way, people are like, what, you've done it like that? Much easier just to do XYZ, and it's sort of gone into a sort of full circle,
right? Yeah.
But
I mean, mine, once I've stopped doing the breastfeeding, have had more formula, I think, than I mean it's amazing stuff. And I know for a I'm pretty certain that the health benefits are kind of, for me, it was more about feeling, you know, my mum is very practical, and she wanted to get out and about, and she was, you know, on her own with three under five, and that worked for her. And but for what worked for me, because I liked the fact that I could just, and was, you know, once I got the hang of it, because it had been sort of an issue in that first awful week. But I
and it's really bonding. It's
really
usually,
yeah. And but I do just think, like, the play is about, it is just about what works for you, and being honest about that, and, you know, being honest with your partner about what's working for, because, you know, he felt a little bit excluded during, and that's why I liked it.
Just very subtly.
They need me. Yes. They need me, darling.
Me,
they need me.
Sorry.
Thank you, Catherine Parkinson, for coming to talk to me. It was a real thrill to meet you, and I found it really funny and interesting. Just one little fact-checking thing. We were talking about formula and when it was invented. And we wondered to ourselves whether it was the 60s or the 70s. Well, I was closest, had I meant the 1860s. So apologies if you're listening and thinking, what stupid, stupid women. Just goes to show, it only feels like yesterday. Not that we are Victorian, although Catherine claims she is. Next week, I will be talking to actress and writer Hayley Jane Standing, who I spoke to a few days ago, and she was so brilliant. I ran out of time in the studio, and we've literally only covered the birth. I'm actually contemplating whether we do another recording. But anyway, she's incredibly talking about lots of things, including IVF and also sadly having to have a termination, which hasn't been covered yet on the podcast. So don't miss that if there are issues you've been affected by, and even if they're not, it's a really great listen. So anyway, thank you for listening, and see you in a few weeks.
Bye bye.